The following is a lecture on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 14, Text Number 12, given by His Divine Grace, Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj Gurudev, recorded on February 27, 1983, at Sri Sri Radhakalachanji Dham in Dallas, Texas.
Bhātāni aptarumānānam lokanna viṣate yaśaḥ patirabhavadvido yāśaṁ prajāya nanujāyate bhārtari by the husband apta uromananam of those who are beloved, lokan in the world, avishate spreads, yashaha fame, patihi husband, bhavat vida like your good self, yasham of those whose, prajaya, by children, nahu, certainly, jayate, expands. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. A woman is honored in the world by the benediction of her husband, and a husband like you will become famous by having children because you are meant for the expansion of living entities. Purport. According to Rishabhdeva, one should not become a father or mother unless one is confident that he can beget children whom he can deliver from the clutches of birth and death. Human life is the only opportunity to get out of the material scene, which is full of the miseries of birth and death, old age and diseases. Every human being should be given the opportunity to take advantage of this human form of life, and a father like Kashyapa is supposed to beget good children for the purpose of liberation. I'll read two more verses in the purport. Pura pita na bhagavan daksho duhitvi vitvatsalaha kham vridnitya varnaram vatsa iti apricata na prita. In days long ago, our father, the most opulent daksha, who was affectionate to his daughters, asked each of us separately whom we would prefer to select as our husband. Purport. It appears from this verse that free selection of a husband was allowed by the father, but not by free association. The daughters were asked separately to submit their selection of a husband who was famous for his acts and personality. The ultimate selection depended on the choice of the father. Saviditva tmaja nanam no bhavam santana bhavanaha Ayodashadatasham yaste shila manuvrataha. Our well-wishing father Daksha, after knowing our intentions, handed over 13 of his daughters unto you, and since then we have all been faithful. Purport. Generally the daughters were too shy to express their opinions before their father, but the father would accept the daughter's intentions through someone else, such as a grandmother, to whom the grandchildren had free access. King Daksha collected the opinions of his daughters and thus handed over 13 to Kashyapa. Every one of Diti's sisters was a mother of children. Therefore, since she was equally faithful to the same husband, why should she remain without children? Namah Om Vishnu Vinaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Intinhamya. Namaste Sarasati Deve, Gauravani Pacharne, Nirvishesha Sangavadi Paskata Deshatarne. So here we are hearing something of the social system which was present during Vedic times. And this is of interest to the devotees of the Krishna consciousness movement. Although it is not, we may say, the primary concern of a Vaishnava, nevertheless, the necessities of vana and ashram have to be considered so long as we are on the bodily conception of life. For one who is transcendental, perfectly situated in Krishna consciousness, he knows himself, or she knows herself, as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord, and fixed in his or her constitutional position as the devotee or servant of the Lord, such a person is on the absolute platform, beyond the considerations of varna and ashram. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's a statement that there are one who becomes fully Krishna conscious is indifferent to the rules and regulations which are mentioned in the Vedas. So, these rules and regulations which are given in the Vedas are specifically to help one to become unconditionally the unalloyed servant of the Lord. Once one is fixed in Krishna consciousness, then the primary essence of all the Vedas, that is loving devotion unto Krishna, that is the guiding factor in one's life. But so long as we are not on that absolute platform of pure bhakti, then these rules and regulations are important. Just like when you are learning how to drive a car, there are so many rules and regulations which have to be followed, and one has to make a careful study of them. But once one becomes experienced as a driver, then these rules and regulations are not so much important, because one knows automatically how to drive nicely, and one can enjoy the use of the car properly. So one should not have too high an opinion of one's position in spiritual life. It is safer to always see oneself as very much fallen. And practically speaking, even an advanced personality, even the acharya, like, for example, Srila Prabhupada, he still, as far as possible, followed all of the rules and regulations, not so much for his own needs, but to set an example for others. So we have to act not only to advance ourselves, but we should always be aware that our behavior will set an example for many others. That is responsible life. Responsible in the sense that we don't think only for our own well-being, but we recognize that as devotees of the Lord, there is a great responsibility inherent in becoming Krishna conscious, and that is to give Krishna consciousness to others. So Krishna consciousness is given to others not only by one's preaching, but by one's example, his acts, because actions speak more than words. So, although these descriptions in these three verses are aimed more or less on the bodily conception of life, so long as we are within this bodily conception, the body has to be considered. Spiritual life does not mean to neglect the requirements of the body. As a matter of fact, if one artificially tries to disregard the needs of the body, then one may fall down. Therefore, there is this varna anashram, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. These different ashrams are there to satisfy the needs of all different classes of men. So one has to find a suitable ashram from which to make advancement in spiritual life. So this is the system that one begins in the Gurukul as a brahmachari or brahmacharini, and one is trained in the principles of spiritual life. So after a certain stage, when one reaches a proper age, then the spiritual master will see the disciple's advancement in spiritual life and will recommend to the disciple, now it is suitable for you to either remain as a brahmachari, free from the association of women, or that one should become married and take up responsible household life. This is the spiritual education, that one is trained to accept this type of advice or guidance, not that on one's own one allows the senses to roam freely and becomes disturbed by sex agitation, and without any superior guidance falls down into gross mundane life. So if one is trained from youthhood, then it becomes very easy throughout one's life to remember Krishna. Now we see so many old dogs joining our movement. So therefore, old dogs learning new tricks is very troublesome, difficult. So it's difficult for the devotees now to control. But for the children who are brought up in the Krishna consciousness movement, they won't have to undergo this difficulty so much. So they're very fortunate. So these statements now can be analyzed. Diti is addressing her husband. Unfortunately, she's motivated. This is a very dangerous position. One has to know that between man and woman, the binding factor is sex life. So, as long as there is Krishna consciousness, that sex factor is under control. Just like some powerful energy, say atomic energy, is very powerful. It can destroy whole cities. But if it's used properly, it can cure disease. It can produce so many wonderful sources of energy, etc. With proper intelligence, atomic energy can be used for man's well-being. But if allowed to go on its own course, or if it's put in the hands of someone who is a rascal, then it becomes very dangerous. So sex energy is the same way. Because sex energy is so powerful, and it is now in the hands of rascals, it is producing havoc. Varna sangra, unwanted activities are being created, unwanted population is being produced by this uncontrolled sex energy. So we have to learn to control our sex desire. That is done through something more powerful. Something is controlled, a thing is controlled when the controller is more powerful. That whoever is more powerful, that thing will be dominant. In other words, if there is some force, but someone is more powerful than that force, he can control that force. So you have to become more powerful. You have to find out a way to control the sex energy. So sex energy is the principal manifestation of Maya. For a man, the woman is Maya. And for a woman, man is Maya. So this Maya in the form of sex energy, we have to find a way to control her. And that way is Krishna. Krishna is more powerful than Maya, because Krishna is the Lord of Maya. So this sex life can be controlled by Krishna. That means that if we take shelter of the Supreme Lord through the regular chanting of his holy names and the regulated process of devotional life, then Maya will not control us. Krishna will control Maya, and therefore Maya will not be disturbing. So here it is mentioned that the husband gives a benediction to the wife. So the benediction that the husband gives to the wife is a child. That is the, from a worldly point of view, that is the real benediction. In other words, a home without children is not really a home. And a woman, this is her interest, to have children. So she requires her husband's benediction upon her, and that he is pleased upon her. Normally, in Vedic tradition, no one would think to have sex life without trying to produce a child. The husband and wife were very strict in this regard. They would never consider having illicit sex because it was very dangerous. Unwanted progeny degraded family life. The woman would become defiled. No one would ever think of this. The man would release his semina, spoil it unnecessarily, losing his intelligence. No one would think in these ways. So, it was a very special affair for a husband and wife to consider having a child. It was not taken up just on a whim. As Prabhupada points out, unless the husband and wife could guarantee the liberation of the child, they would never think to have a child. That means that unless they are fixed in Krishna consciousness, there was no question of having children. So, this was the way. So the woman, she would try to satisfy her husband by very disciplined, loving, affectionate service. She would make the house very nice, cook nicely for her husband, always take care of all matters for him. And gradually, as the husband became very much satisfied, he felt indebted to his wife. Naturally, for so much service rendered, he felt lovingly indebted to his wife, so he would fulfill her desire, and a woman's desire is to have children. So therefore it says that this is the benediction which a husband gives upon his wife. So that is from a worldly point of view. From a spiritual point of view, that is also spiritual because they conceive a Krishna conscious child, but the business really for a husband to give to his wife is to train her in spiritual life. The husband is a natural representative of the spiritual master in the family, just as the sannyasi is the natural representative of the spiritual master within the varna ashram system. So within the family unit, the husband is the natural representative of the guru. So it's the duty of the husband to train the wife and the children in spiritual life. This is real benediction. The real great benediction that you can give someone is to help them to avoid having to take another birth again in this material world. So the husband should see one's wife just like a student. In other words, a spiritual master, for example, would never think in any way to take advantage or enjoy his disciples. So similarly, the husband should never think to take advantage or enjoy his wife. Rather, he should think that it is my duty to help her to advance in spiritual life. If the spiritual master takes some service from a disciple, it is for the disciple's advancement, to attach the disciple to him on behalf of Krishna. So similarly, if the husband is fully Krishna conscious and the wife renders service to the husband, then that will make the wife advanced. She will automatically make advancement. So husband and wife in Krishna consciousness are transcendental couple. Because Krishna conscious devotees, they act, in fact, within varnashram and yet transcendental to it. That means that the husband and wife are combined together not for simply material satisfaction, but for Krishna's satisfaction. We are a preaching movement. Therefore, it is not possible for us to establish within our ranks at this time the full varnashram system. Yeah, were we to try to do this, then all of the preaching would grind to a halt. Rather, we are sacrificing the comforts of varna and ashram for a higher principle. That means that Vaishnava principle, that the devotees are becoming preachers. Just like our women devotees, they're becoming preachers. For example, this restaurant, that is not really within the Varna Ashram institution as you might think of it normally. But it is preaching. It is a preaching tool. So our ladies, they're working in the restaurant, they're giving tours. They're not at home looking after their husbands, looking after their children. They're sacrificing for a higher principle, which is to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. So one may be worried in this regard, that now I am neglecting my husband, I am neglecting my children, so there will be some reaction for this, because one who does this normally has to suffer some kind of sinful reaction, because a wife's duty is to serve the family. But Krishna says, sarva dharmam paridyaja mamekam saranam vraja aham tvam sarva papiyo mokshasyami masucha. There will be no sinful reaction. I shall protect you, Krishna says, from all such dangers. Do not worry. So we have experience of this during the presence of Srila Prabhupada, how he engaged all of the grihasthas fully in Lord Krishna's service. His whole purpose was to deliver the world this great benediction of Krishna consciousness. So anyone who sacrifices, putting aside all types of mundane worries, he gets a special benediction and protection from Lord Krishna. What is that? Pure Krishna Bhakti. Pure Krishna Bhakti. Krishna says that anyone who explains this science to the devotees is most dear to me. So when we engage within the preaching movement of Lord Chaitanya, it does not matter whether we're sitting on an elevated seat speaking Gita. That is not what Krishna only means. He's not so limited in his purpose when he says anyone who explains this knowledge to the devotees is most dear to me. That is not only the meaning, it's simply that one has to speak words from the Gita. We are enacting the meaning of Bhagavad Gita philosophy. We are demonstrating through so many different activities the Bhagavad Gita philosophy. Therefore, anyone who takes part in any one of these activities, he's a preacher. He's fulfilling this verse of the Bhagavad Gita. And therefore, the results which Krishna promises are automatically received by such a person. What are those results? In the end, I award them with pure Krishna Bhakti. In the end, I award them with Krishna's devotional service. Krishna says, I reward them with my devotional service. So, a devotee is elevated onto the platform of pure devotion. And this is actually the goal of human life. The goal of human life is not simply to fulfill the various responsibilities of Varna and Ashram. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is mentioned that even if one were perfectly to satisfy the requirements of Varnashram, but does not develop a taste for hearing the transcendental message of the Lord, then his life has simply been a waste of time. Therefore, Prabhupada's idea was that now we are here in this Western civilization, and it is very materialistic, and we have been captured for so many years. We are joining, not from childhood, from birth, but we are joining later on. We have so much materially conditioning. So let us use the balance of our life fully absorbed in Krishna's service on a higher principle, transcendental to Varnashram. Prabhupada wrote me a number of letters on this point, that the International Society of Krishna Consciousness is transcendental to Varnashram. Now that means that we take some minimal account of the needs of the body, but we give the primary concern to the needs of the soul and to the needs of Krishna. We are immediately being brought face to face with Krishna. The devotees of this movement, Krishna has personally come in the form of the deity, spread out all over the world in so many different manifestations to take up the service of the devotees. So there's no question of backing away. There's no question of denying Krishna now that he has come. Just like we see here in Radha Kalachanji Dham. So you see Radha Kalachanji has come, and gradually he's absorbing all of our time so that there's no more time for husband, for wife, for children. So everybody is very alarmed by this, that what will happen to my beloved family? You see, but what will happen is you'll all go back to God. That's what's going to happen. You're not going to have to take another material birth. In other words, by the grace of Krishna, you're all being elevated. Everybody is making a sacrifice for the service of Krishna. That is Krishna's will. That is the whole intention that Krishna had. That's why he came here to Dallas, to absorb all of us in his loving service, not to allow us to rot away in the dark well of Grihastha Ashram. We're all meant to become transcendental to Varnashram, whether we're Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. That is not the issue. That is simply a facility, whatever is convenient for calming down our mind and senses. We accept that ashram. We're not attached to that ashram, nor are we attached to the rules and regulations of that ashram. That is meant for a less intelligent man who has no ability or contact, no opportunity to contact a pure devotee. Pure devotees don't teach Varnashram. Pure devotees teach pure Krishna devotional service. They teach Varnashram to those who are not very advanced. So the members of our institution, the Krishna Consciousness Movement, should not expect the leaders of this movement to begin to instruct them on the principles of Varnashram. That would be cheating. That would be like going to the point of going for your PhD degree, and then the professor who's trying to help you to become a PhD start to teach you elementary education. And that would be ridiculous. So once having come to this postgraduate course of Krishna consciousness, do not expect to gain instructions on the level of, you know, how to live within this world peacefully. We're not interested in that. At least those of us who have come to Krishna consciousness should not be so concerned with how to live in this world peacefully. We want to learn how to get out of this world. Varnashram prepares you gradually to become ready to get out, but Krishna consciousness gets you out. This movement is transcendental. When you're doing service to the deity, which is what we're doing when we distribute Prabhupada's books, when we give out prasadam, when we clean the temple, this is direct service to Krishna, transcendental to this material world. There's no mundane reaction for this. So, this type of statement on the part of Diti, "Oh, my husband, give me the benediction of a child," that has to be interpreted in two different ways. From the materialistic point of view, every woman says this to every man. So her statement is not very wonderful. And it's not such a wonderful benediction. But it is wonderful if they're devoted. As you will see, it is practically not at all a wonderful request on her part, because she's agitated by illicit feelings in the sense that she's uncontrolled in her sex desire, and neither her husband was able to control her. So the whole thing became abominable. And there was a catastrophe. Of course, because these are great personalities, Krishna was acting. So you will see that this catastrophe turned into a wonderful blessing. But normally speaking, this was not a very good proposal on her part. In the middle of his meditation, you can imagine, man, imagine if somebody's chanting japa and the wife comes up and starts begging him for sex life. That's not very good. Not at all very good. So this was not very good on the part of Diti. But normally, at the right time, if the wife approaches the husband, "I think that I would like to have a child," and if they get the blessings of the spiritual master, then that is very nice. That is an act of religion. One must, of course, involve the spiritual master. That is stated in the Bhagavatam later on, in a later volume, that even if one is a grihastha, he is just as much obliged to receive that guidance and direction from the spiritual master as a brahmachari or sannyasi would. I said this the other day, I think, here, that sometimes our grihasthas think that now I will take the grihastha ashram so I don't have to listen anymore to my guru. No, that's not at all the idea of grihastha ashram. There's no difference. You're the disciple of the spiritual master, whatever ashram you may be in. And therefore you have to receive guidance and direction. So if a husband and wife want to unite together for producing a child, the permission of the spiritual master should be sought out. Why? Because the spiritual master should certify, yes, you are now ready to deliver a child back to Godhead. You have to take that sanction, because the spiritual master will tell you, yes, you're sufficiently fixed up, that if you try to conceive a child now, you'll have a nice devotee, not some little rascal, you know, who's a menace to the world, like these two menaces that were born as a result of this illicit sex of Dithi and Kashyapa. So, now some further points are mentioned here, that the unmarried girl, was allowed to select her husband. So, this is very different, however, from the present day. Nowadays also the girl is selected, but the basis of it is different. Because formerly the girls, they would hear about great personalities. That was natural. The sadhus, the sannyasis, were traveling from town to town, village to village, and they would give information to the grihasthas. Yes, in such and such place there is a wonderful king or a wonderful prince. And they would speak the glories of these great kings and princes. Why? Not because they were some nonsense like Henry VIII or Louis XIV. There was not that type of king. They were praising the kings and the princes not only for their chivalry as protectors of religion, but they themselves were highly religious persons. So they would say, yes, there is a king, he is very powerful, or a prince, he is very powerful, very handsome, very wealthy, and very religious. So the girls who were living at home, they would come to hear and know about the different princes and kings who were living in different places. And so they would automatically become attached to hearing, through hearing. Just like Rukmini. This is how Rukmini was married. She came to learn about Krishna by hearing about him. And her natural love for Krishna awakened within her heart. Of course, she is the original goddess of fortune, so she's always combined with Krishna. But this is how she took information about Krishna, found out about him. So what was attractive was religion. No woman would be attracted to a man were he not religious. Nowadays, the more a man is a brute and a rogue, the more he becomes appealing to women. And the more a woman is a prostitute, the more appealing she is to a man. Just like we were traveling on the airline, and this man and woman were simply enamored the whole time. Completely enamored with each other to the point where they could not even see what they were doing in public. And I was saying in Houston that there are some recent statistics published that in the flight, the pink eye flight, they call it, from Los Angeles to New York, you take off 9 o'clock at night, arrive in New York 6 in the morning. So they interviewed. They had a poll amongst the travelers who regularly go on this flight, and nearly half of them said that they have sex life on this flight. Somehow or other, they managed to do this. Only, you know, they can understand how this is possible. So that means that people are so fallen in this age that they are like animals. They have sex anywhere, everywhere, under all circumstances, just like an animal. They have no ability to control themselves. So. We see that the young boys and girls, they're running freely together, mixing together. A man naturally wants to protect his daughter. That is natural. If there's any type of human quality within him, he wants to see his daughter protected. And yet, when the daughter gets to be 11, 12, she starts dating boys. And he has to watch helplessly as his daughter goes out of the house. And he knows that my daughter is behaving in a very improper way, but he can't do anything about it. And the mother is training the daughter. You act like this, dress like this, put this makeup on, training the daughter to become a prostitute. It is so horrible. It's such a horrible situation that's come about nowadays. So the daughters are all unprotected, and they run around loosely with different men. It is a very horrible thing. So we, at least, should show something pure. Our movement has to present very wonderful alternative, because some people who have some sobriety, there are some sober men and women left in the world, they will appreciate the purity of our women. They will appreciate that we cannot accept these standards, that we cannot allow the daughters to be unprotected, that we do not want to train our sons to be rascals and rogues like this, that they should have appreciation for their elders, just like here. Although the girl it's mentioned that the girl would inform the father of who her preference was, the decision was up to her father ultimately. She was not. Nowadays, there's no question of it being up to the father. And usually, the girl's already pregnant. half the time. She says, I'm already pregnant by this man. And in the Vedic time, it's mentioned here, the girl was so nice and chaste and shy, she could not even speak to her father about this, because he's a man. Even though it's her father, she could not speak to him on this subject matter, because he's a man. So she would speak through her grandmother. She couldn't even speak to her mother about this. That's how shy the girls were. But the grandmother is just in a very special way, so the girl could speak, yes, I like this boy, or I like this man. And then the mother of the father would inform her son, who was the father of the girl, this is the person that she wants to marry. And if the father thought it appropriate, he would agree. And if not, finished. The matter ended there. And if it didn't end there, there was great problems. So many people, if there were big kings or something, there was fights going on, and even people would be killed on this point. So, this is the Vedic culture. Of course, our Krishna consciousness movement, we are trying to adjust things to suit the times. There are no kings and princesses and like that, and there's no grandmothers who can advise us. Grandmothers are all senile, mostly, or else completely themselves prostitutes, practically speaking. So what are they going to advise? So we have our system, our Krishna consciousness system, temple presidents, GBC, spiritual masters, to give guidance, to give advice. We have our elders, our ISKCON elders, who can advise. Gradually now, our devotees are having children, so naturally they will advise who is the proper person. So we should at least base our activities on Krishna consciousness. This is the point, that the marriage, the consummation of the marriage, having children, all of these things, it should be based on Krishna, not based on sense gratification. This is the problem. When something is based on sense gratification, it becomes hopelessly entangled, hopelessly conditioned, condemned to with repetition of suffering. So, although this is a mundane topic in one way, it has its lessons to be learned from it. Nothing in the Bhagavatam is without connection with Krishna. If you were to read this verse alone, you'd probably think, what kind of a book is this? Anyway, this doesn't sound like a spiritual book. But, as you will see, two big demons were born. And they were such big demons that Krishna himself had to incarnate. God had to incarnate just to deal with these demons. So in other words, this illicit mood of ditti has a connection with transcendental subject. Because it was the way in which Krishna arranged to take his appearance as Varaha Dev and Nrisimha Dev. But there is connection, as we will learn. Everything in this Bhagavatam has got its connection with God, with the Absolute Truth. This book is a totally transcendental subject matter. It has nothing to do. There is no recommendation anywhere in this book for mundane life. Everything is for the purpose of hearing the transcendental glories of the Lord, because this is the basis of spiritual life, to hear and chant about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is the narrations, the topics about the Supreme Lord and his activities with his pure devotees. So these verses and the coming verses, they're all related to the Supreme Lord. So we should not give any mundane idea that, oh, this is a mundane sex literature. It is not a mundane sex literature. It is all in connection with Krishna. And subjects which have connection with Krishna are purifying. Anyone who hears attentively the message of the Bhagavatam, he's delivered from the cycle of birth and death. This is the method that was recommended for Parikshit Maharaj at the time of his death. The best thing, it was told him, is that you peacefully hear the topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That will do good for you, and that will benefit others as well. So our business is like that, to hear the topics of the Supreme Lord. You should be eager to hear. Eager to hear, eager to let others hear. And our preaching means to arrange opportunities for others to hear the message of Godhead. This is our real purpose. Those of us who are trying to advance this movement, this is the method to broadcast the glories of Krishna. And we should understand it, that the easiest way to make advancement not by Dvana Ashrama, not by any other method, but by this expansion of the preaching mission. Please note that Krishna has come in this age as Sri Sri Gaur Nitai, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and their mood is preaching. Krishna's mood in this avatar is that he preaches Krishna consciousness. So the preaching mission of Krishna consciousness is the religious principle for this age. To expand this Krishna consciousness, that is real religion, and that is how you will make advancement. So take full interest in ISKCON, whatever part you are to play in it, whether you're a book distributor, a devotee maker, a pujari, a cook, a temple builder, whatever your activity may be, you should understand that you are connected with the preaching of Lord Chaitanya. You are part of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan party, and therefore you're making great advancement, the best advancement. You can make no better advancement by any other method. So don't become bewildered by the apparent conflict, oh, how can I make advancement and at the same time, how can I preach? I don't have the time to do both. You are making advancement by preaching. Try to understand. Imperceptibly, unknown to you, Lord Chaitanya is appreciating what you are doing. And because of that, he's showering blessings upon you. He's making you advance. You will only understand it in time. The more we allow ourselves to be used for the preaching mission of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, the more we will find ourselves tasting the pleasure of Krishna consciousness. That's true. That means that our material desires are having no opportunity to fructify. That's what it means. The preaching is so great. There's so much preaching to be done that there is no chance for our material desires to get any water. If you just chant, try to chant on your own in your home and that's all, there's so many hours free when your material desires get watered. But if you allow yourself to serve the preaching mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where is the time to water your material desires? Therefore they dry away and disappear. They dry up and disappear. And all that's left is this bhakti lata, the plant of devotion, the creeper of devotion, which grows and grows and grows. So we should all cooperate together, work together, make this movement expand to every single town, village, and home throughout the world. America is very important, most important preaching place in the world, and we are in a very nice part of America where there are so many big Americans, and we have to find a way how to convince them of this philosophy. Yesterday we got a very good opportunity to trick one visitor to the temple who was very proud about being a Texan. In fact, she said, not only am I a Texan, I'm a native Dallas-born person. She said, and there ain't many like me. So I said to her, yes. I said, I am simply praying to Krishna that in my next birth I will also be able to be born here. She said, oh, that's very good. So that means she accepts now reincarnation. She is so attached and proud about being born in Texas, in Dallas in particular, that when she heard that I wanted to be a Texan, that she was willing to accept, yes, you know, you may be able in your next life. So in this way, she accepted the principle of reincarnation. So somehow we must preach. Of course, that is just not a very... Anyway, that was a nice thing I saw in her. We use someone's attachment like that to teach some higher philosophy. So, are there any questions? Yes? This is blasphemy.
agree with what you're saying, that the spiritual master is qualified by his spiritual master now saying, now you're a guru. That is nonsense. Lord Chaitanya says, Amara Gai Guru Hari Tadidesh, Yare Deti Tadidesh, Krishna Upadesh. He explains what is a spiritual master. Anybody who preaches Krishna consciousness becomes qualified as a guru. Now, how this movement is set up that everybody cannot initiate, that's another practical matter. That some people will initiate. But that's not a fact, that someone is not a guru. I don't accept that. Prabhupada saw that they were gurus, and he had to appoint some people so that there would be orderly succession. You cannot say that they were not. I don't accept that. I don't accept that the devotees in this temple, some of them are not qualified to be spiritual masters. Some of them are. Anybody that can follow the instructions of Krishna and give those instructions to others, he is a guru. That person is a guru. Now, that everybody may not initiate, that is another matter. Because we have to run our organization in a nice, orderly way. But that is not a fact that someone is not a guru. I don't accept that. That's the wrong thing to say. That this person was ordinary conditioned soul, but then the spiritual master touched him or named him, and then he became a not time qualified. No, we don't accept that. I accept that some of the devotees here, they're qualified to act as guru. They can show by their example, and they can instruct others. The authority to finally give initiation, that is given by the spiritual master, or in our movement by our governing body commission. But don't think that they're not qualified to be guru. There may not be a need. That's one of the qualifications. There should be need. So in Prabhupada's presence, there was no need. But that does not mean that they weren't qualified. But it's not the proper etiquette that in the presence of one's spiritual master, one should not initiate. One should not accept disciples. But that doesn't mean they weren't qualified. It's not suddenly they became qualified. That's not true. You have to be careful not to think like that. They were qualified. Prabhupada trained them to become qualified. Just like we're trying to train the devotees here to be qualified to act as gurus. The world requires thousands and hundreds of thousands of gurus. Maybe they won't all initiate, but they should all be qualified as gurus. That means whoever they meet, they should be able to deliver them Krishna. That person is a guru. We shouldn't have some initiating gurus, none of them. That's different. Even though one may not give initiation, he may be a guru. Association. The way that one purifies oneself is by good association. If they come into our association, then they'll become elevated. Gradually. So if you invite them to Kalachandri, eat more at our restaurant, associate, come to the class, that's the way you purify your life. The idea was given by Prabhupada in one letter to me. I think it was quoted in the book Servant of the Servant. The Prabhupada said, the purpose of our temples is to teach the general population how to worship in their home. That by coming to the temple, they see deity worship, they see the Guru Puja, they see the Kirtan. Then they should take whatever they've seen and introduce this in their home. That means congregation. So they should come here and learn and introduce in their home. Then naturally some of them may want to have more association and make greater advancement. Then they may come to live within our community. But even if they don't, it's not a mandatory requirement. You must live within the community of devotees. You may not be able to because of your work. But then you should learn everything that is done here and introduce this in your home. In other words, you make your home a temple. Then the girl won't run away like this. Unless you become Krishna conscious, you have to expect the Kali Yuga is going to take hold in your home. When one is Krishna conscious, Prabhupada said, the effects of Kali Yuga cannot act. Our temples are not under the atmosphere of the Kali Yuga. They're not. The things which go on in Kali Yuga don't go on in our temples. So if you can make someone's home into a temple, then that's not Kali Yuga. Then those things of Kali Yuga, like girls going out when they're unmarried, that won't happen. Right? Anybody else have any questions? He knows at least 400 preparations, this man. He knows how to cook 60 or 70 types of dal, at least 40 types of halwa. I didn't even know there were 40 types of halwa. But he has a book where it's all listed. I've seen it. Yes, what is your question? Yes. That's why it's very good to get the maha plate at night. Sunanda's kindness is already all right to enter into you. But some of those other characters in there, I'm not so sure about this. It's a hotbed in the kitchen there. But their consciousness is nice. Yeah, that is true. Consciousness enters into the cooking. That's true. Now, it becomes transcendental. Once you offer something to Krishna, it becomes purified. Just like Prabhupada explains that sometimes people raise this point that the chemicals and other things are on the foods when they're, you know, because they spray the ground and the vegetables with chemicals. So we should only offer organically grown, set, you know, food products. The Prabhupada said practically about everything is contaminated in this age. There's no question, really. Of course, there's degrees, but in the ultimate issue, the whole ground is contaminated in Kali Yuga, the air, everything. The water systems, they're all contaminated. He said, but as soon as they get offered to Krishna, they become purified and transcendental. So in the same way, we're offering not only the food that we cook to Krishna, we're offering our work. Someone is sewing for the deities, someone is distributing books, but nobody's in perfect consciousness. But as soon as the act is accepted by Krishna, it becomes pure and transcendental and complete and perfect. Krishna says, Ananyas Chintayan Domam Yejanaha Pravipasita Tesham Nidhiyotanam Yogakshanullah. Whatever you lack, I will cover it. And whatever you have, I will preserve it. Krishna fills up all the gaps. Krishna says, every endeavor is covered by some type of fault. But that doesn't mean that you stop working. So although the consciousness of the cook may not be absolutely perfect, although our consciousness in whatever service we do may not be 100% perfect, Krishna makes it perfect when he accepts it. Then the prasadam is perfect. Whatever comes from Krishna is perfect. Just like a little boy, he wants to buy something, so he's saving pennies in his bank account. So when he has some money and finally he's saved and saved, and then he goes to the store, and whatever money was left in his father puts the balance in, and then the boy gets the toy. So whatever we have, as far as we have it, you offer that to Krishna. And whatever is lacking, Krishna will fill up the rest. He's very merciful and kind, like an all-loving father. Other question? Yes, Prabhupada. Because ultimately we're in the same position that our position is this, that although we are a fool before our spiritual master, and although as a fool it's embarrassing to be before the spiritual master, and we're so inept, yet we know that our only hope to stop being foolish is our spiritual master. It's a dilemma. Although we are fool and nonsense, and therefore we feel ashamed to offer such ridiculous service to our spiritual master, yet we know that the only way we'll ever stop being a nonsense is to offer the service to our spiritual master. That means that our spiritual master is an ocean of mercy. And although we are so disqualified, he nevertheless encourages and accepts our service. The same type of mood, in a similar type of way we were saying last night, is like the gopis. That they also feel that they're so unqualified. I mean, their mood is a different, it is a different point, but it's a similar type of apparent contradiction. That they're so much suffering on account of separation from Krishna that they just wish, I wish I could forget Krishna. But the only problem is I can't forget Krishna. The dilemma, spiritual dilemma. So here's another spiritual dilemma. I'm a fool, and I feel so ashamed, and yet I know that there's two things I know. One, I'll never stop being a fool without my spiritual master's association and help. And two, even though I'm a fool, even though I'm ashamed, I have to be with him. I can't not be with him. I want to be with him. So, it's a dilemma. The answer is that this is the solution. Think yourself a fool, but don't be a fool. Just like one person bit a steak in serving Prabhupada, I think it's in the volumes maybe 4 of Lilamrita. So it was in regard to Vrindavan management. Maybe it's not, but anyway, this is happening. And one of the managers of our temple in Vrindavan, they made so many mistakes. So Prabhupada said, why do you keep making so many mistakes? And he said, I'm just a fool, Prabhupada, I'm just a fool. Prabhupada said, stop being a fool. So the real answer to this is that although you should always think yourself a fool, don't actually be a fool. How's that? Just like Lord Chaitanya, he thought himself a fool before his group. Can you say Lord Chaitanya was a fool? No, but he's the perfect disciple of his spiritual master. He's humble, because in front of his spiritual master, he is like a fool. He feels himself. But actually, he should be very first class. A disciple should try to make his or her service so first class that the spiritual master very much depends upon such a disciple. This is the way to enrich the relationship with the guru. That one should make one's service so nice, the spiritual master is always depending upon such a disciple. That should be our competition. How we can render so much service to our spiritual master that he depends upon us. Of course, ultimately, the spiritual master is independent. Prabhupada showed both cases. And he used to say that, what can I do, one single person? If you boys and girls did not come to assist me, I would never have been able to do this. But then on the other hand, one devotee you've seen in the film, Vishnu Chandra, asked Prabhupada something about Bhakti Vinod, how he was praising Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said about Bhakti Vinod that if Bhakti Vinod had wanted to, he could have delivered the whole world and the whole universe. But out of his kindness, he left it for us to do so we would get some credit. So the spiritual master, if he wants to, he can do everything on his own. But out of his kindness, he engages his disciples. So the disciple should try to take up so much nice service and make the service so first class that the spiritual master is always thinking of such a disciple. Just as the disciple is thinking about the spiritual master all the time, so similarly the spiritual master is thinking of his disciples all the time. And that goes on, even after his departure. We do not think that Srila Prabhupada has departed. So whether one has got his spiritual master before him or whether his spiritual master is not before him, that is not at all important. The connection is every bit there. We don't think that Srila Prabhupada is departing. He's watching, guiding, directing our every movement, and we're trying in the same way to please him. So, think yourself a fool. One time, someone said that, like that also, someone said to Prabhupada that, I feel like such a fool before you, and Prabhupada said, always think that way. Then there will never be trouble. Don't ever stop thinking like that. A disciple should never come to the point of saying, I used to be foolish, but now I have learned how to serve my spiritual. Now I have learned how to serve Krishna. That's not the right answer. No, there's some checks. For example, if your eagerness to hear about Krishna in the form of hearing kirtan and in the form of hearing class, if that eagerness is increasing, you're advancing. If you find your eagerness to associate with devotees and to take on more service is increasing, that means you're advancing. If you find yourself unable to tolerate in an enjoying mood, the association of non-devotees, or activities which are non-devotional, you're advancing. That doesn't mean, on the other hand, a preacher wants to associate. He wants to, you see, a preacher's mood is, he wants to associate with the people of the world to turn them into devotees. He can't tolerate to see anyone not as a devotee of Krishna. Therefore, he's always making plans how to bring the non-devotees to the point of being devotees. So he does want to associate with non-devotees, but not in an enjoying mood of enjoying their non-devotional activities. So there are ways to test one's advancement. So there are ways to test. If your mind is not dwelling on Maya, in other words, if your mind is more and more absorbed in service, that's a sign of advancement. Sometimes devotees complain, I have no time to think of anything. Why should you think of anything else? That's good. Krishna's mercy on you. You have no time. No time for Maya. So much service to do, there is no time. You go from one thing to another and you think it's like a chicken without its head. But chickens don't engage in devotion. It's very good that there's so much service. Yeah. Because the engagement is also kirtan. Therefore, if one is actually on the Raghunuga platform, he would have already felt himself very satisfied and connected spontaneously with Krishna, even in that engagement. That is also kirtan, to cook in the kitchen, to sew for deities, to be out at the airport at the same time. That is also to hear the redundant of kartals. We should understand, Raghunuga means, Raghunuga Bhakti means the satisfaction of being engaged constantly in Krishna's service, whatever that engagement may be. That is Raghunuga Bhakti. Not only in kirtan, whatever the service may be, to know and to experience Krishna's presence everywhere, that is Raghunuga Bhakti. To feel Krishna's mercy at all times, and his engagement to be satisfying in any shape or form it may take. That is Raghunuga Bhakti. So it could be, but it's not necessary. That we should feel ourselves satisfied Raghunuga Bhakti means that without feeling remorse for any service, without requiring to be prompted at any moment, one is always anxious for service and always satisfied in all situations of service, without preference necessarily. Because the attachment is for Krishna, not so much for service. Just like I was, I remember when we opened our restaurant, I used to make up the place. So I found that to be as satisfying as kirtan. There is ecstasy as much as kirtan. And we all have that experience in our respective services. Someone is doing one thing or another. So, that is also Krishna kindness. Don't think that these engagements are not are less valuable than kirtan. They're not a replacement, but they're not less valuable. Just like peas and carrots are not a replacement for potatoes, but they're equally valuable. When we eat a meal, it has to be balanced. But each thing has got its own merit of equal value. Of course, sweet balls are special. So there's no doubt that Harinam is special. That's accepted. That is a fact. When you get initiated, you have to promise not that you'll work in the kitchen 8 hours a day. You have to promise, I'll chant 16 rounds a day. So that means chanting of the holy name is the most valuable thing. But on the Raghunuga platform, one begins to be able to perform all activities on the same meditative mood that one chants the holy name. Yes, that is like the, it is special, it's a special thing that Lord Chaitanya is right there at the airport on the parking lot and he immediately accepts the offer. You're already in Lord Chaitanya's hands. On Sankirtan, you're in the lap of Lord Chaitanya. Whatever you do is liberated. Just like in Mayapur, whatever grows there is already prasadam. Doesn't even require the offered. It's already prasadam. So Sankirtan is like this. We offer everything in Mayapur. So we make an offering. Because we have to, we don't remember that it's prasadam. But actually it's prasadam. So similarly, whatever a Brahmin does, whatever he eats, it's already offered to Krishna by his eating. So similarly, the Sankirtan devotee is risking so much for Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, that Lord Chaitanya is personally there accepting and watching over everything this devotee does. So the devotee eats on Sankirtan to keep his body going so that he can continue to preach. Whatever he does is already accepted by Lord Chaitanya. Special. That is a fact. Just like I was thinking last night, these devotees must really be tired working in the restaurant because they were working for 8 or 10 hours. I was saying to Sananda, they must be tired. Or Narata. Who was it? I think I said it to Sue. What is his name? Sananda. I was saying to Sananda. But then I said, but actually, yeah, this one, excuse me. And then I said, but actually, it's not as tiring as Sankirtan. Because he said, yeah, especially those devotees who start working at 1, and it was about 9, 8 hours. I said, but every Sankirtan devotee does that every day. And they don't have 25 people surrounding them. And they're not dishing out prasadam. They're surrounded by karmis, and they're all alone. So who can compare the austerity? If I offer our Sankirtan devotees, you can go on Sankirtan and work in the kitchen. You watch. Except for one or two, they'll probably, we'll have a lot of kitchen help. Sankirtan is the greatest austerity, and therefore it gives the greatest mercy. Whatever is the greatest sacrifice, you get the most mercy from Krishna. You may say, I just don't understand it, I just feel wiped out and exhausted. How can you say I just got so much mercy? It's happening. All of those impurities and material things are being erased very quickly out of the heart by Sankirtan. It's a great mercy, because it's such a great austerity. The Sankirtan devotees are all glorious. We should all simply touch their feet and be their servants. Anyone who goes in Sankirtan, I simply want to serve them. I feel totally indebted. I feel indebted to all devotees, but I especially feel indebted to the Sankirtan devotees, because I know what great austerities they perform. They're like, that when the devotees come back from Sankirtan, the mother devotees or the man devotees, they should be seen just like great heroes of war who return home. And they should be a ticker tape parade. Actually, they're heroic that they go out, especially our mothers here. This is very wonderful that they go out and with their children. Nowhere else, I can say it with pride. I have yet to see any place in the movement except in this zone where mothers with little children, they go out with their children for a week in a row. Have you ever heard of such a thing? I have never heard of it. It doesn't exist. They have a fanatical guru. Now you're all becoming fanatics. This is the fanatical Sampradaya section over here. Yeah, this is the mood. This is very good mood. This is the mood of the gopis. Everything is, you know, just go out and serve Krishna. All right, if I have to take my salary, I can take my shower. But I must carry out the order of Krishna. All right. Usually have to wait until the children get old, or they become your eyes. These mothers are attached. That's also true, because in some zones, they're even more far out, more fanatic. They just say, okay, here's my baby, catch. You know, and then they go off and forget it. But these women are a little attached, but they're also a little responsible. They're responsible. They want to keep their children with them, but they're prepared. All right, we have struck a bargain. You keep your child from going sick. In some places, they're even more fanatical. But I don't command that type of fanaticism, because I'm dealing with attached people. I might have a jumping ship otherwise. Mutiny. And it's nice, the children are also seeing their parents going on the same time. They see them every day. They go to other cities. They see my mother's on the same time. Now I have to talk to them when they come back and ask them where they were. And they all say, we were on the same time. And the children may benefit. And the husbands may benefit by their wives being away. Everybody's a good answer. The husband, wife, has a little detachment. They're sacrificing normal sense gratification of being together. Because even being together, there's some sense gratification. Oh, you're making great advances. Carry on this program. And look at how our zone is developing because of it. Otherwise it would be impossible. It's actually wonderful how many, such a small zone with less than 100 devotees, simultaneously doing this project, building a project in Oklahoma, and now taking on a project in Houston, all simultaneously, with maybe 80 adults, with a good, cool, big restaurant starting in there. How is it possible? It's actually, you remember when I went to Gitanagari, I said that when I walk up and down the road with Srila Gurupada, everybody's smiling. I said, that's the only difference between this zone and my zone. In my zone, nobody smiles. Everybody's in complete anxiety. Now it's like thank you. I brought misery to you. Everybody's in anxiety now. Parmenon is beat everywhere. Go out and snake it. Go out and snake it. We need more money. Yes, Prabhupada said, work now, smile later. Samadhi later. Don't worry about smile. Our happiness is like this. Our happiness is knowing that we're engaged in pleasing our spiritual master. At any moment you can draw this balance from your account. That's my point. Although you may not see yourself advancing, at any moment you can draw this balance. That your account is getting filled up very quickly when you, the more you sacrifice for Lord Chaitanya. At any moment you can draw that balance. That at any moment means as soon as you sit down to chant, you'll get the result. If you're given 2 or 3 days off, you'll coast so easily in Krishna consciousness. You'll be on so much of a higher platform. Then you'll realize it. Now you're in the middle of a battle. How can you realize? It's such intense and difficult. But everybody should be very careful, especially the mothers who go out and then come back. Don't fall to pieces. Don't slide down there. You may not be doing sankirtan service, but keep yourself just as engaged. Be fixed. Don't diminish your meditation or concentration. That should be kept. It just may switch to a different activity, but don't diminish it. In other words, the spiritual master is pushing everybody to the limit to become Krishna conscious. Pushing everybody to the limit that they're just being pushed into Krishna consciousness. Even though one is attached and is trying to hold that. Someone else had their hand up over here. I saw a hand up, one of the mothers. Anybody else? Questions? So yesterday we set a new record at our restaurant. Nearly 160 people served. That was only 160 people. It seemed like there was 360 people. I can't imagine what it's going to feel like when there are 350 people. The temple was packed out. It was packed, waiting. People were waiting for 1 hour. They had to sit in here being preached to. If they were in that gift shop, they were just, they had nothing to do but just buy things. They were just waiting for an hour. The intelligence is there for making this gift shop. Nice. Oh, this is very good. Just looking for things to do. The whole bench was lined up with people reading. I think this was Kala Chandra's mercy to make people wait so that they're forced to get into Krishna consciousness more. I think they practically all knew what Prashan was before they even got in the restaurant this time. They had all read about it. And very ecstatic. Very, very ecstatic. Yeah, no restaurant supplies God. They can have it sit down with God for one. Normally, they have a bar and you just drink cocktails while you wait to sit down. That's a nice thing to do. It's too bad. It's not too bad, but that would be a nice thing to do. But while people are waiting, you could give them drinks. But it's a little awkward because they're not really sitting in any one place. Anyway, they'll wait to this one. So it's very nice that that's okay. Let us pray that this problem goes on happening more and more. This is the dream. This is the problem that we would love to have. Can I see you? Yes. Yes. Will you tell her when there's enough of her friends, we'll make more seats? Just push us, though. Push us enough, and we'll expand. when I know for sure that they're always pushing, then we got a lot of room for expansion. There's 2.5 acres this way, and there's another 0.5 acre this way. I can definitely squeeze and expand on one of my layers. I was thinking that the day will come when it may be possible for this whole community simply to be engaged in this one activity. Distributing, you'll just stand out here and distribute books, make devotees, distribute prasadam, all 50, 60 devotees. That would be great preaching success. Prabhupada.